This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
The following is a live copyrighted presentation. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time now for RadioLawTalk.com with your host, Frederick Penny, attorney at law. And now, RadioLawTalk.com.
Welcome to hour number two of Radio Law Talk. I'm Todd Kunin. On assignment are Fred Penny and Denise Dirks. I don't know why I said that backwards. I mean, doing my... You ever notice legal speak kind of sounds like Yoda? On assignment, Fred Penny and you and Denise Dirks are.
On assignment, he is.
Yes, yes. You know, forever single you will be. So I'm filling in here in the big seat, the big chair for Fred. We in the first hour, we had a case or no case about the steamy love letters of former President Warren G. Harding. And if you want to go and read those, I'm telling you, they're giving Cardi B a run for her money. And Jerry Seinfeld probably wants to change his first name. You'll have to read the letters to get the context. And then we also talked about a Supreme Court ruling that is going to have, I mean,
let's just say when he said Jerry, he was not talking about German euphemistically, but, even though she was a supporter of German.
Yes, no, he was not. And so, and we talked about it, the Supreme Court ruling in Samia versus United States that is going to have an impact on lower level courts throughout the United States when it comes to the admission of one statement of a co-conspirator against the other co-conspirator when the other co-conspirator will never have the opportunity to cross-examine the person that made the statement before the jury gets to hear it and consider it against the one, and whether or not it's an interesting ruling.
It's fascinating, aren't
and it
think?
Is what it is. But we've got other stuff. We're going to get to the Supreme Court ruling about affirmative action in college admissions here in just a moment, because that is one that is making a lot of headway in the news the past week since that decision dropped from the Supreme Court. We also have other individual cases like the Rust case and Kevin Spacey and Travis Scott and a bunch of things to get to. But Cal...
Yeah. You're ready? You're ready for this?
I'm ready for case or no case.
As you know, I got 2 points last time.
Yes. That's right. I gotta mark that down. Cal got 2 points.
Make a note of that. It's okay. Very rare. Very rare. And by the way, you may get two this time. Who knows?
Now it's time to play case or no case.
Now to Augusta, Maine, the capital of the state, where Sinjar, Azerbaijan, has just moved to Maine from Toronto, Canada. There to open a small neighborhood grocery store, bigger than a convenience store, but a neighborhood grocery, right next to the state capitol building. He figured he'd get a lot of tourist dollars and maybe some business from Maine's part-time legislators for convenience items and microwavable food and what have you. So anyway, Mr. Azerbaijan got the store. I opened it up the week before Halloween, did a very brisk business. Then came Thanksgiving week, and it was slow. So Mr. Sinjar decided he would open the store on Thanksgiving Day. A Maine state policeman drove by and saw the store open and immediately came in and said, "What are you doing?" He said, "What do you mean, what am I doing? I'm selling goods on Thanksgiving Day." The officer said, "No, it is against the law. You may not do that." Mr. Sinjar was flummoxed. He did not want to violate the law, but he needed the money, wanted the day's sales. He called his attorney the next day and said, "It's unconstitutional to order a store to close on a holiday." The lawyer said, "Well, that may be your opinion, but it is the law." So Sinjar Azerbaijan decided, you know, Canadian citizen, decided to try out the U.S. legal system and see if he had a case or no case. And that, Todd, then falls on you to make that same decision.
What year was this?
1998.
Yes, sir. In Maine.
Yep.
It is alleged that there was a law, according to your scenario,
yes, as it
that
were.
There was a law that forbade a business from being open on Thanksgiving Day?
Thanksgiving Day, Christmas Day, Easter, and Sundays.
I mean, if it was against the law where I live to have a store open on Thanksgiving Day, do you know the number of tables that would be devoid of things so easily forgotten like whipped cream?
Sour cream,
sour cream,
cheese, chives, baked potato, and, or in some cases, ready prepared meals. I mean,
yes, stores the turkey.
Right?
Wait, did anybody actually buy the turkey? Oh my! I am shocked that I would say that if it's a I hate it because this is more about strategy of what Cal is up to. Because what I'm thinking is some well-intentioned police officer knew that Thanksgiving was a federally recognized and maybe a state-recognized holiday, which gave state and federal employees the day off because it was a recognized holiday. But that doesn't mean that every business has to close. It just means that if you work for a business that either recognizes it because of state or federal law or chooses to have that day off because they're a state or federal agency, private business chooses to have that day off, well, it's up to them whether they want to acknowledge the day off and whether they want to pay their employees holiday pay if they're there, but it's not a requirement that the business has to close. So I'll say it's a case, and Azerbaijani wins because the officer was completely mistaken as to the law, and it is a case because he needs to be recompensed for the amount of money he lost by the enforcement mistakenly of a law that didn't exactly exist.
Do you know what I like about this show? Listening to you think your way through a case. It is such a labyrinthine path sometimes, isn't it?
Look, if you're gonna take a look into the recesses of my brain, I highly recommend you take a canary.
Good point. In a cage. Okay, with a gas mask on. So now,
yes.
Is it a case or no case? Todd said it was.
It's a case and the store owner wins.
And I say no case. But
okay, how did you come up with this one, Cal?
Well, because I came across the story. It is illegal in Maine to have stores with more than 5,000 square feet open on Christmas, Thanksgiving, Easter, and on Sundays, except the week in between Thanksgiving, in between Thanksgiving and Christmas. In those weeks, it can be open on Sundays. Unless the law says it's a case of necessity, emergency, or charity. So Mr. Azerbaijani could have declared an emergency. I have a fiscal emergency. I need the money. Anyway, so it is against the law.
You know, is it like against the law always enforced, or is it like against the law and nobody found out about it until they looked at the original charter for the state?
No, Maine is very active in maintaining holidays and what they call keeping the Lord's Day holy. We're going to shut stores.
Okay, all right. I just remember the episode of The Simpsons where they're looking over the town charter of Springfield and they say, oh, hey, look here, guess what? It's against the law to put a squirrel down your pants for the purposes of gambling. And then they open up the door of the police station, and there's all the officers with money thrown out, and one guy's got a squirrel running around his trousers. Hey, Lou, you guys got to knock that off.
Should tell players in the NFL that.
Now, oh, my, that is...
Next out,
night.
Joe Albertson versus Joe Collins. That's on Case or No Case next hour, right here as we get into the second hour of Radio Law Talk with Todd Kunin.
And we'll be back.
Stay tuned. We'll be back. Remember, Radio Law Talk is available 9 to noon Pacific every Saturday, live on RadioLawTalk.com and on many radio stations coast to coast.
Radio Law Talk. And RadioLawTalk.com.
All
All advertising for legal services on Radio Law Talk is strictly for the state or states in which the advertiser is licensed. For more information, go to RadioLawTalk.com.
It's easy to see. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. We all know something big is coming, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming more self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. My Patriot Supply is the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, and they make it easy for you to prepare. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure some emergency food kits. There's a dozen to choose from that contain tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one food kit for each family member. My Patriot Supply also sells large solar generators, gravity-powered water filtration systems, heirloom seeds for your garden, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m. and your items will ship that same day. Time is short. Prepare today. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
I had no idea it would destroy my life, but before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.
Are you paying too much for term life insurance? There's a tremendous price war among the major term life companies. Rates have dropped dramatically in the past few years. For example, a man age 45 non-tobacco user, $1 million of coverage is only $75 per month, level for the next 10 years. Or a man age 50 non-tobacco user can buy $500,000 of coverage for a monthly premium of only $110, guaranteed not to change for the next 20 years. That's right, level rates for 20 years. And if you're a smoker, we have great rates for you as well. At the Term Lifeline, we specialize in policies of $500,000 and above. So if you're looking for new or replacement term life insurance, call right now for a free quote.
Rates and availability may vary by state. Sample rate quotes are based on preferred non-tobacco underwriting exam required to qualify.
800-430-1891. 800-430-1891. 800-430-1891. That's 800-430-1891.
Advertising is simple. It starts with someone who has a need.
Mom!
And then gets more specific.
Mom, I want pizza.
Then we add urgency.
I want pizza tonight.
Before you know it, your GCN advertising message is reaching millions of listeners. Listeners who are definitely in need.
We want pizza!
You see, advertising on GCN is simple. Your message meets their need, and the result means new business for you. Tell us about your business, then let our super creative department go to work to craft just the right message to feed those who have an urgent need.
We want pizza tonight!
GCN has the most affordable national radio advertising rates, period. And millions of people listen to GCN radio programs on over 1,000 AM and FM and XM stations and streaming audio live. Get started today with GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. Just shoot us an email, advertise@gcnlive.com.
Radio Law Talk. I like that show.
Now it's time for more Radio Law Talk.
So I was going to go into one Supreme Court decision about affirmative action. I'm still going to get to that one, but it made sense based upon Cal's case or no case dealing with Sunday, the requirement in the state of Maine for businesses, what, businesses over 5,000 square feet?
5,000 square feet, yep.
Required to be closed on Sundays, Christmas, Thanksgiving, things like that, right?
Yeah.
All right, so it made sense to go to this one because this is another little case that was that the opinion dropped this last week from the Supreme Court, and it involves a postal carrier. And the postal carrier's decision or desire to not work on Sundays because of his religious beliefs. Let me set the scenario for you. Gerald Groff is an evangelical Christian and for religious reasons believed that Sunday should be devoted to worship and rest. It's almost as if it was found in a book of Ten Commandments. I don't know.
Something like that.
All right. So Groff, in 2012, took a position as a postal carrier, working for the Postal Service as a postal delivery, and it was great because the Postal Service didn't deliver on Sundays in 2012. But filed this under the heading of, can all bad things in the world be traced back to Amazon? When the Postal Service began doing deliveries for Amazon, well, they started doing deliveries on Sunday.
7 days a week, that's right.
And so Groff, not to be a stick in the mud, decided and put in for and was granted a transfer from the to a rural mail delivery position because the U.S. Postal Service, despite its working for Amazon, still did not deliver in this location for Amazon on Sunday. So he could be a rural delivery guy in for USPS and not have to work on Sundays. But again, the encroachment of the Amazon river.
Right. And this is a deal they signed with Trump, right? Yes. I mean, this was signed under Trump to try to save the Postal Service by generating more revenue.
I don't know when it started. It's not really germane to the case.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. I just want people to know that this has not been going on forever. It's a fairly recent development.
Well, especially since this didn't start until 2012, so it's in the last 10 years. So, when the rural service started doing deliveries for Amazon, he still said, look, I'm not going to work Sundays. And so they had other postal carriers fill that shift. And the problem was that he wasn't working the Sundays, and he started to receive progressive discipline because of his refusal to work on Sundays because of his religious beliefs. And it began to be unbearable. And so he resigned. And then sued under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, claiming that he was being treated differently because of his religious beliefs. And the case went up to an appellate court where he lost, and it went to the Supreme Court where, well, there was an interesting decision that went down. And what this really hinges on, there was a 1977 case that talked about this, and it talked about the request should be granted unless it would create an undue hardship for the employer. So essentially, the way it had been interpreted, undue hardship from 1977 until this case that dropped last Thursday, was, as the Supreme Court said, undue hardship was always interpreted as something more than a de minimis encroachment at minimal cost.
In other words, inconvenience of scheduling or whatever.
If the employer said, well, I can't do this because it's going to tick off a bunch of other employees because they had put in for vacation, well, that's more than de minimis. So that's an undue hardship. Ergo, you don't get your day off. Right. And they were able to do that. And that had been the law up until this case. And the decision came down where the court said, look, we're not going to do away with the undue hardship rule, but we're going to redefine it for lower courts to employ. And here's the key difference. It says Justice Alito, writing for the majority, which is an interesting term, and I'll get to that in a second, said, what we're doing today, quote, should resolve whether a hardship would be substantial in the context of an employer's business in the common sense manner that it would use in applying any such test. And they said, we think it is enough to say that an employer must, and here's the key word, show that the burden of granting the accommodation, the burden of letting him take Sundays off, would result in substantial increased costs in relation to the conduct of its particular business. Substantial increase. So look, what does that seemingly take off the table? It doesn't increase the cost to the business if somebody else has to fill that shift.
Right.
I'm paying the same. Unless the employer were to say, look, you make $20 an hour, and the only person I have to fill that route makes $100 an hour.
Or I'm short bodies, and I have to pay another guy overtime to cover your deliveries.
Maybe that would cover the cost, but that is the standard. It's got to be more than de minimis. And so they overturned. This guy kept losing on appeal and everything because everybody said, well, it was more than a de minimis hardship. And so now the new standard is, yeah, unless the employer can show a substantial cost to the employer for granting your request to have the time off, you get the time off.
So the new hardship is dollars and cents and really nothing else. Not inconvenience, not difficulty. Scheduling, it's show me the do-re-mi, basically.
By right? Using the word cost, I would say that.
Yeah.
Now, here's the kicker. I said majority, right?
Yeah.
Unanimous decision on the part of the court.
Wow.
9-0. Unanimous decision. Every justice said, yep, this needs to be the law. And that's the way that it is. We come back. We're going to talk about affirmative action. Don't go away.
Did the Postal Service argue against? They must have. It was their case. So they were the people standing up and saying, no, this isn't going to work for us.
Come rain, yeah. Come snow, come sleet, come hail, Sunday. Or a request for the day off.
Or Sunday. Right. We'll be back. More Radio Law Talk is coming up right here. Stay tuned.
Commercials and other announcements aired on Radio Law Talk contain the opinions of the sponsor. The airing of said announcements on Radio Law Talk does not constitute an endorsement. The announcements may contain claims that are not intended to treat, diagnose, or cure any disease.
These claims have not been evaluated by the FDA.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or you now need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Health Insurance Helpline can help you get it. We specialize in helping the self-employed and people just like you that need affordable health insurance to get it. We have short and long-term health insurance plans, and some even cover dental, vision, and prescription drugs. Don't take a risk with your family's health insurance. It's not worth it. If you're self-employed or now need affordable health insurance, call right now and learn for free how to get it. Listen, affordable health insurance plans for everyone just like you are a free phone call away. So give us a shout right now.
800-670-0946. 800-670-0946. 800-670-0946. That's 800-670-0946.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
USA News Update. Shake, rattle, and roll. Aftershocks still being felt after that rare 4.8 magnitude earthquake hitting the Northeast. The epicenter in the town of Lebanon, New Jersey, that's about 50 miles away from New York City. For a period of time on Friday, ground stops at the New York area airports, including Newark, New Jersey, LaGuardia, and JFK, as runways were inspected for cracks. Dave Collins has more.
The U.S. Geological Survey confirms a 4.8 magnitude earthquake occurred heard. Social media posts started popping up from folks feeling the shake from New York City to Long Island, upstate New York, New Jersey, and Philadelphia.
Turning now to sports, the Final Four semifinal games tonight in Glendale, Arizona. First up, the game between Purdue and NC State at 6:09 Eastern, and then number one UConn and number four Alabama play at 8:49 p.m. And I'm Laura Winters, USA News.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. After taking Extendivite for about 6 months, I've noticed improvement on the numbness of my hands and wrists from the carpal tunnel syndrome. I will continue to buy product. This formula is very powerful. I am feeling much better. My heart rate and blood pressure is stabilized, my lower edema has reduced, and lower leg pain due to blood clots has disappeared. This product has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
If you pay my fee, I'll take your cake.
Oh, stop it.
And now back to Radio Law Talk. Here is your host today, Todd Kuenin, in for and away, Mr. Frederick Penny. Hi, Todd.
How you doing, Cal?
Yeah.
We're halfway through this show. You doing all right?
Yeah. I'm holding together. You know what's weird is all of a sudden the air conditioning did not kick on, and today this is no day. So I was kind of sitting there thinking, am I sweating or am I just nervous today because it's me and Todd?
Well, maybe, I don't know. Did you read the Warren G. Harding letters? Is that what happened?
Yeah, my glasses are all messed up now.
Because you're on the other side of the glass, and it's very cool temperatures where I'm at. But but I didn't read the letters, so.
But they are certainly steamy and veiled, but it's a fascinating story. I said to myself as I read it, has anyone made a movie about this? And it would be an interesting movie.
Yeah, but I think you had to go to the back of the video store to buy them, to rent them.
I mean, the guy in the front goes, oh, you want that one?
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, you know.
I have it at home. I'll bring it for you tomorrow.
Yeah, it's called The Oval Office. You'll want to read it. Cal,
yeah.
Look, for the listeners out there, I have to confess something.
Uh-oh, what?
So Cal is wearing a shirt today.
Yeah, and most days I do.
And it is, what color is that? It's, you ever watch, like, the Tonight Show when they have the animal trainer comes on with the exotic animals? And there's usually always some sort of uniform that they're wearing that's usually some sort of light green, olive-colored, you know, same uniform they would wear in the zoo. And
lighter
like that
than a military green,
yes,
but sort of like a canvassy kind of a green. Yes.
Cal is wearing a shirt just like that, complete with what appear to be the little things on the side that you would put the stripes on near the shoulders.
There's no epaulets on the shoulders.
But the way it's stitched from my perspective, sitting 15 feet, 20 feet away from you through the glass. So every time I look at Cal, I keep thinking he's going to, well, you know, Todd, for this segment of the show, we're going to talk about snakes, and I brought a bunch with me.
The law and lemurs.
Yes, you know, at which point, if it was snakes, you would hear crickets. It would be silent radio, and nothing but the sound of the wheels on my car peeling out of the parking lot.
On the part of both of us,
I'm sure. I don't do snakes.
No,
so,
no.
Anyway, I digress. Affirmative action. All right, so the Supreme Court addressed this issue. Here is the issue. There were folks, University of Harvard and University of North Carolina were sued, and by folks claiming, look, I'm an otherwise qualified applicant for your university, and I was turned down, the claim being, by lesser qualified applicants or applicants. My application was not considered fully what have you because another applicant was, and they were a member of a minority race that your institution had a preference for granting. And so essentially race was used as criteria in the selection process, to which Harvard said, yeah, so. And University of North Carolina said, yeah, so. And we believe that we were able to do that under the law that has existed for the last 20-plus years. And you know, we have diversity that we want. So this came before the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court weighed in.
But who brought the case, Todd?
So it was brought, and this is interesting. Glad you asked that,
Thank you.
Cal. It was brought by a group, I just had it, oh, this why I'm not even on that one, is brought by a group called, you know, we're on live radio
searching.
I had it right up here, but then I went to the other case. It was brought by a group called Students for Fair Admissions, SFFA. Now, it's a nonprofit organization whose stated purpose is to, quote, defend human and civil rights secured by law, including the rights of individuals to equal protection under the law. Now, that was the group that filed, right? And there's a lot being said about this decision because, spoiler alert, the Supreme Court said, yeah, you got to stop using race-based criteria the way you've been using it. It's not a complete abolition, but the way you've been using it in the admission process is not the way that it was intended or otherwise authorized by previous court decisions, and you have to knock that off, right? But the big issue here, before they even got to that, was the question about whether or not this group, SFFA, even had standing to raise litigation and take this all the way to the Supreme Court, because it's an organization. Look, or usually to have standing, right, you have to be the aggrieved party. Well, University of North Carolina and Harvard, they don't admit organizations to be students. They admit people to be students. And so the argument from Harvard and UNC was, how can this organization be arguing when they're not the aggrieved party? They're not the ones that were harmed by this. They're an organization that seeks this. The organization didn't apply to go to Harvard, nor would they, because we don't admit organizations as part of the student body. We admit students. So how do they have standing? Essentially saying, look, if you want to hear this, there's got to be a student that brings this, or a class action lawsuit by students that bring this, not this organization.
Sure. So was the organization one of those that was put together so to get representation for this particular cause? I mean, there are such organizations out there.
Well, I don't know if it was put together for this, but if it was, the Supreme Court ruled that under a three-part test, such an organization does have standing.
That's a significant ruling, Todd.
It is, because putting this ruling aside, in future cases, this decision laid the groundwork based upon using a previous decision, which is also from 1977 cases were widely used in this year's court, right? That's Hunt versus Washington State Apple Advertising Commission. There's a mouthful. Say it five times fast. In that case, the court held, well, look, here's a three-part test to see whether somebody has standing to sue under Article 3 of the Constitution. One, part one, does its members otherwise have standing to sue on their own right? So if students were part of this organization and they would have standing under their own, that's prong one that was met in this case. Number two, the interests that it seeks to protect are germane to the organization's purpose. Well, the organization's purpose here was to seek equal rights under the law, and they're arguing that race-based criteria in admissions is contrary to that right. Okay, so that it's part of their stated purpose.
Leg two of the stool. Yeah.
Yes. And the third one, neither the claim asserted nor the relief requested requires the participation of individual members in the lawsuit. So the individual members don't necessarily have to be part of this claim, and the court found that it met that test. And so here we go. We've got this three-part test, and what I see moving forward is going to be a whole host of litigation of groups now advocating on behalf. We've got an election season coming up, and you're going to have lawsuits filed by the Society to Prevent Election Fraud here or the use of machines here. I think that this decision is going to be used by a lot of folks to bring a lot of litigation in the very near future using this decision as a blueprint for how to create an organization that has standing to sue.
So ultimately, the aggrieved party in this was, were there individuals who were aggrieved by this alleged, what some people call reverse discrimination? I mean, obviously, there were individuals involved. So how do they play into that versus the organization?
Well, the organization, remember, under the first prong, the members of the organization would otherwise have standing to sue in their own right.
Okay. So they get the same result as
they get the same result because the organization is made. It's essentially a way of creating an organization that acts like a class in a class action lawsuit without the need to file a class action.
Got it.
And so, okay, you know, that's the way that it's going to work. Now, look, I remember recently our president said something that a lot of people objected to it at the time, but what he said was technically correct. The rights that you have under the Constitution are not absolute. There are times and certain circumstances when a law can come out that seemingly abrogates a right under the Constitution, but it has to meet certain criteria as interpreted by the courts in order for that law to stand. We'll talk about that when we come back. It's called strict scrutiny. And we'll talk about the way the court interpreted that when we come back from this break.
A lot of interesting stuff right here on Radio Law Talk as the show continues on this Independence Day weekend. And what better way to celebrate your independence than talk about the things that help us be free, the law. After this, stay tuned for more Radio Law Talk.
Commercials and other announcements aired on Radio Law Talk contain the opinions of the sponsor. The airing of said announcements on Radio Law Talk does not constitute an endorsement. The announcements may contain claims that are not intended to treat, diagnose, or cure any disease.
These claims have not been evaluated by the FDA.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson representing a team of lawyers who help people that have been injured or wronged. If you've been involved in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident or injured at work, you have rights and you may be entitled to money for your suffering. Don't accept an offer you get from an insurance company until you talk to a lawyer. And we represent some of the best personal injury lawyers you can find. Tough lawyers that will fight to win your case. And they're so good they stake their reputation on it by only getting paid if you win. So if you've been in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident or hurt on the job, find out today for free what kind of compensation you may be entitled to. Call the legal helpline right now.
800-509-4492. 800-509-4492. 800-509-4492. That's 800-509-4492.
Hi, this is Sophie Winnick, longtime distributor and user of Longevity products. In the last few years, my family went through a crisis. Everything else in my life, including my business, had to be put on the back burner. Thankfully, life is getting back to normal now. But the one thing I never had to worry about was my business and my monthly commission. I've been a distributor for Longevity for over 17 years, since before it was Longevity. And I've got to say, the most amazing thing about this company is the people. While my family was in crisis, other distributors stepped in and helped my customers, simply because that's what Longevity people do, even for people they don't know. For me, it has never been about getting rich. It was about a product I could stand behind, a company I could count on, and a monthly commission check that has never, not once, been late in 17 years. Longevity is truly a business for everyone, even people who have too much to do. I'm Sophie Winnick. I'm just like you. I have a real life, real ups and downs, but I know I will always have Longevity.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Tehebo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. ShopSuperT.com.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
Boys are weird.
Are you serious?
This is Radio Law Talk.
So that's what 48 minutes means. 48 minutes means. And now back to my good friend Todd Kuhnen, the host today of Radio Law Talk.
All right, so let's talk about strict scrutiny, and I'm not talking about people that look at my Tinder profile.
Easy now.
So, we all enjoy freedoms under the Constitution, but sometimes the government can encroach, and when the law passed by the legislature encroaches on a fundamental right, it has to pass what's called strict scrutiny. The courts look at two things. First, was there a compelling governmental interest in the law that the government was trying to address? And is the law narrowly tailored to achieve that interest? And the classic example that we have from law school was, it's against the law to yell fire in a crowded theater. This was back in the day when that could really be a hazard.
Is that still the law?
Well, so many people are streaming at home right now, What's a crowded theater? But the compelling governmental interest was, if you yell fire in a crowded theater, it's going to create panic and people will die. And so, yeah, sure, you have freedom of speech, but when you do that, the government has a compelling interest in the safety of its citizens, and because of that, this law is narrowly tailored. We're not in, is narrowly tailored. We're not encroaching on all your free speech. We're just saying in this context, you can't use those words, right? Same thing is true with criminal threats. Yeah, you have freedom of speech, but if I say to Cal, look, I'm going to pick up this hatchet and come into your office and I'm going to, you know, hack you into a billion bits and make that criminal threat. Yeah, you know what? The government has an interest in not allowing that conduct and that kind of fear to happen, and so a law prohibiting me from saying that is narrowly tailored to achieve that end.
So I should keep this note as evidence, you're suggesting.
You should. It would be a soundbite. And so I use that to say that the use of race as part of admissions criteria a long time ago was... courts struggled with it. They struggled with schools, how schools were going to justify using race. They said, what is the compelling governmental interest? And it wasn't until, Grutter versus Bollinger back in the early 2000s, this case came down, and the Supreme Court at that point in time said, all right, we will recognize that a diverse student body, diversity in the student body, is a compelling state interest that can justify the use of race in university selection criteria. Now, everybody saw that and said, we're good to go. But what they ignored was the second part of that opinion. By the way, Justice Thomas was on the court at that time, disagreed. He dissented. He did not agree with the majority. And... the rest of that decision, though, clearly indicated that, first, the diversity of student body needs to be clearly identifiable. It needs to be temporary until you feel like you've achieved it and it's there. It's not something that should be ongoing. Well, it seems like, and I think the court in this last week looked at that and said, hold on a second. You guys seem to have forgotten everything else we said in that decision, because... you heard, hey, there's a compelling state interest in diversity, and you just went hog wild. By the way, we also said in that decision that race-based criteria should not be used as a negative. Like, an otherwise qualified applicant shouldn't be denied admission because they weren't part of a minority, which is the way it was being applied according to the majority.
And a new term came out after that in the media called reverse discrimination. Instead of somebody saying discrimination is discrimination, it doesn't matter the race of the party being discriminated against. Discrimination is what it is. But that was the buzzword when this came out. Only practicing reverse discrimination.
Yeah. And that's the way it went after the Grutter decision from, I think it was like 2002, 2003, somewhere along in there, from that until now, so for the last 20 years. And the court readdressed it and essentially held, with all of the data that was put forth in argument by Harvard University, I mean, it was interesting because the data that they put forward, it almost made it look like, well, look, here's the ratio of African-American students to Caucasian students. We had all this. The real aggrieved group were the Asian-American students. And, you know, it almost felt like it almost felt like when I heard the arguments, it felt like, well, look, yeah, but we're achieving equality with the African-American students. Yeah, those are Asian-American students. They're different, which is just as racist. It shouldn't matter. And I think the court was looking at that saying, you know, if we're going to say that you can't use race or you have to achieve a compelling student body, diversity in a student body, we mean all races. Look at the disparate impact you're having on Asian Americans, and it was just being poorly used, and so the court said, essentially, and this is a quote from I think it's the majority opinion: two constitutional wrongs cannot result in a constitutional right. Either race discrimination is wrong or it's not wrong. And we kind of know the answer to that question.
Yeah.
It's wrong. And you can't say, well, it's wrong unless we're using it to achieve this. It can't be used well. You guys are relying on unquantifiable goals. You can't look to it. I mean, what do you have as a goal? if you're looking to achieve diversity, that's quantifiable. Look, look at the numbers that we've got. But if you're using as your compelling state interest to empower more people to seek their own, how do you quantify that? And the court had problems with it. If you can't quantify it, it's not a compelling state interest that we will recognize that will allow you to abrogate constitutional rights.
And if you have objective standards for admission, and you've got a pool of people who meet those objective standards, you can't say, oop, wrong race, you can't come in. I think that's kind of what they were saying, in a way, was it not?
Yes. You can't say wrong race, you can't come in. They still said, look, you can use it maybe as a push point, but you can't use it as a negative, and that's what you've been using. Now, it still begs the question, and I don't know how Harvard and University of North Carolina is going to do this. Let's say, hypothetically, you have 20 applicants, and putting aside race, putting aside that, they score identical on every metric that the school uses, right? They're identical candidate. You could not tell one apart from the other based upon how they were ranked and their scoring and everything.
Grades,
putting aside
service clubs,
see.
Extracurricular, the whole deal.
And let's say there's only 15 spots and you got 20 people that are equally qualified. What are they going to use? What are they going to use? And look, I think it puts those schools in a bit of a predicament, because if you run into a situation like that and it turns out that the five people that are excluded in that scenario, and let's say there's always five people excluded every time the admissions come around, and statistically speaking, the groups that those five fall in are the same groups, well, it's going to look discriminatory, and they're going to have some explaining to do.
And I did hear a university spokesman say, well, we'll still use race, but just in a different way.
Well, and that's
and that's what the court said.
That's what the court said. The court didn't absolutely abolish the use of race in selection criteria. It just said, look, the way you've been doing it is wrong. And we'll give you some guidelines at how it should be used moving forward. And we'll see if the schools are able to get it. I don't think that we have the decision. The next 5 years are going to be a significant look at how schools seek to implement the guidance of this decision.
I think the content of character, qualifications, all of those things need to go right back at the top of the list. But, man, it's a tough decision. I've seen those admission committees. They've got some really hard decisions to make.
They do. Yeah. But, with the online schools that have just and the online nature of school, I guess the question is, why can't you admit more?
Yeah.
It's not like students taking up space in the classroom. You have an infinite classroom now. Why can't you take up more?
Great point, Todd. Thank you. Radio Law Talk will conclude for this hour, but we'll be back 6 minutes after the next hour right here on many great local radio stations. And if they turn it off, you can turn it on at RadioLawTalk.com. Click the Listen Live button. We'll see you at 6 after.
You have been listening to RadioLawTalk.com. A copyrighted presentation of Radio Law Talk, Incorporated.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, veterinarian and naturopathic physician. The Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy with an important message. Take charge of your health. Do not continue to blindly follow the system that has failed us all. I appreciate GCN listeners because you're open-minded and intelligent. If our system is so great, why is it that the United States, the USA, ranks nearly 60th worldwide in longevity and number one in obesity? All the while, we spend more money than all the other countries combined annually on unnecessary health care procedures and toxic drugs. It doesn't take much to get on track, not with the government. government or pharmaceutical companies, but rather you in control of your own health with a basic understanding of nutrition and supplementation. FDI Longevity has the finest quality health, sports, and energy supplements available. GCN listeners are invited to join our team of people who want to stay healthy well into old age. We are currently looking for specialists to represent FDI Longevity and save America. To buy products at wholesale prices or join our business team, go to GCNteam.com. That's GCNteam.com. Support GCN. Get healthy.